Here we go again with another edition of the American Cattleman Podcast. My name is Dustin Hector, and I'm glad you're joining us today. Just ahead, we have the publisher of the American Cattleman, Gail McKinney, and he sits down with Dave and Brandy Jensen with Hawkeye Breeders out of Adel, Iowa. But before we get too deep, here's a quick word from Bob Tolman and our friends at Rawhide Portable Corrals.
We understand cattle. That's why the world's first hydraulic corral just keeps getting better. Our system is simple, flexible, and durable. Built to keep your cattle operations easy and trouble-free. All the best features of a portable system with unmatched customer service is why Rawhide is often imitated, never duplicated. The Rawhide Portable Corral.
And we're back. During today's episode, you will hear a little bit about Dave and Brandy's personal background. They will also discuss the history and the background of Hawkeye Breeders, and they'll wrap it up by talking about the facilities and all the services that Hawkeye Breeders provides. Before we kick it over to Gail, here's another quick word from our sponsor, the official hat company of the American Cattleman, Shorty's Cowboy Hattery.
It's way more than just a hat. It's a piece of American tradition. We're talking about Shorty's Cowboy Hattery, the finest handmade hats in the country. Founded by National Cowgirl Museum and Hall of Fame, Lavona Shorty Coger. For over 30 years, Shorty's Cowboy Hattery has covered the heads of rodeo stars, music stars, working ranch cowboys, and folks that just want to look like one. Shorty's hats remain world famous and are sought after for their attention to detail, intricate sewing process, and signature beaver fur and beaver fur blends. You gotta get you one or two. Visit shortieshattery.com because you deserve the best.
Now here is Gail McKinney.
Thank you, Dustin. Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the American Cattleman Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us again today. I'm Gail McKinney, publisher of the American Cattleman, and I'll be your host today. Today's guests are Dave and Brandy Jensen with Hawkeye Breeders, based out of Adel, Iowa. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. Hey, Dave and Brandy, we talked a little bit when we were getting warmed up here about the weather, and you guys got a little rain down there. We got some up here. It's sure nice to see in Iowa.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, we're definitely short on rain here, and we'll take anything we can get. Just kind of a nice steady rain today. And boy, if it did this for the next heck week, that'd be nice.
Every farmer happy.
It sure would. You know, you guys were talking about, and I've got the picture up here on my screen, and before we roll into this, it's what a beautiful picture on your website of your facilities. And Dave, you were saying the pond probably isn't quite as full today as that picture shows.
No, it's the lowest we've seen it in a long time. We moved out here in 1983. That pond was built in 1984, and I remember it being built, and I don't think I've seen it this low since 1984. We definitely can use the moisture.
Well, let's hope we get some. Hey guys, we're going to get into Hawkeye Breeders here in a minute, but let's learn a little bit more about you two. Whoever wants to start out, tell us a little bit about you know, where you came from, where you grew up, school, education, all that kind of stuff.
Let me start.
Whatever works for you. I was born in Ames, Iowa, and raised just right here in Adel, Iowa. Spent most of my life here. Went to Iowa State University and studied animal science. And I just kind of grew up around the industry, and I always kind of knew this is where I was going to come back to. So, you know, that's kind of my background as far as growing up in education. Had some, you know, kind of worked in the cattle industry, worked around the cattle industry through school, got a little experience outside of Hawkeye. Just my grandfather thought that'd be kind of a good thing. And once I finished up at Iowa State, I ended up back here and been here ever since.
Yeah, and I grew up in Northwest Iowa on a hog and cattle operation and ended up and went to school at UNI, and we actually met at an Angus banquet. My parents were coming down to Des Moines, and I thought I'd come visit them, and went to the Angus banquet and was introduced by Doug and Rita Washburn, because they had originally asked, oh, do you got a boyfriend? And like, oh, you got to meet this guy. So they're the ones that set us up. And Ever since, let's see, 98, I guess.
Yeah, definitely a blessing.
All right, that's great. So how did you guys get involved with Hawkeye?
Well, like I say, I grew up in it. You know, I kind of grew up in the industry. My grandparents, Lloyd and Doris Youngman, they started the business in 1969. My grandfather served in World War II, and he was one of 14 brothers and sisters. And he came back, and his family was involved in row crop farming, just south of where our current location here in Adel is today. He grew up around the Adel Van Meter area here. And when he came back, you know, he'd always kind of had a passion for cattle and the cattle industry, but he didn't have much experience with the cattle industry. So kind of looked around to see what was out there and kind of what was going on. And, you know, this was in the early to mid 50s, and artificial insemination was just in its infancy at that time. And he started working with a cooperative. You know, back in those days, there was a, you know, the artificial insemination kind of took advantage of these cooperatives. And they were breeders cooperatives. And there was, you know, Iowa had several of them. The ones that were local to us here were Midwest Breeders Cooperative and Iowa Breeders Cooperative. And those cooperatives would actually hire people to collect bull semen. And at that time, the process of actually freezing the semen and keeping semen stored long-term was not developed yet. So breeders would actually collect semen from high-value bulls. They would cool it, and they would actually use like a milk fat as an extender. And the semen would be viable for 3 or 4 days, and they would send it out on these, you know, every little town back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s had a milk route. You know, every town had a milkman, or they'd have a small theater, and they would distribute the semen using these people that were driving milk routes and movie film routes and things like that to these smaller towns throughout rural Iowa and surrounding states. And those local areas would have people that were skilled in the process of artificial insemination, and they would go around to different farms and AI cattle or artificially inseminate cows. So my grandfather, you know, he thought that was kind of the future of the industry, the future of artificial insemination. And he, you know, he thought this was kind of the way that raising cattle and breeding cattle was going to go. He saw great merit in it, and he started working for a Midwest Breeders Cooperative and worked for them for a number of years. And then in the mid-60s, the technology was more perfected to be able to actually freeze the semen and keep those samples long-term. And he felt like this was going to be the future. This was going to really be the way that superior genetics were going to be able to be distributed, not only nationwide, but, you know, eventually, hopefully, globally. And he really saw the value in that. And he pushed, you know, for the people that he was working for at Midwest Breeders Cooperative to adopt this technology. And there was a lot of pushback, you know, as there is, you know, with any kind of groundbreaking revolutionary, you know, advancements in science and biology and things like that. And he was just sure of it. You know, the pushback, nobody really knew, you know, if there would be any effect of freezing the semen. You know, they thought, well, this isn't going to work. It was almost, you know, looked upon as Frankenstein type technology. You know, you were taking something living in it, you would, you know, you were freezing it, putting it in a static state, and then bringing it back to life, so to speak, you know, at a future date or use for breeding. You know, they thought there was going to be all sorts of problems with conception and biological issues, and they thought there was going to be issues, you know, I mean, even if the calves were born, they weren't going to be hardy, or they're going to be somehow or another less, you know, less healthy than a traditionally born and bred calf. So it was a hill my grandfather was he was willing to die on, you know. And he went round and round with those people, and you know, his bosses and higher ups there. And finally one day he came home, and I've told this story a million times. I always laughed when my grandfather told me the story. And came home one night, you know, exceptionally frustrated, as guys sometimes are. And you got to remember, of course, this was back in the day before, you know, a lot of places even had phones, let alone cell phones or yep. public, you know, social media, anything like that. So came home and penned out a real big, long, "Here's to you," and the horse he rode in on, "I quit," you know, and he was going to venture out on his own and take this new technology and make it work. So he wrote that letter out that night, you know, and as is often the case with men, you know, and he woke up the next morning and little cooler head, and he headed off to work at 4 a.m. thinking, they'll come around eventually. So meanwhile, you know, later in the morning, my grandmother got up, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. She had to go run errands. So she saw that letter on the desk in their kitchen there and folded it up and put it in an envelope and sent it off to headquarters. So they kind of, you know, whether they were ready or not, they were out on their own. So I can't even imagine the conversation that happened that night when my grandfather got home and asked where the letter went. But, you know, it ended up being the biggest blessing, you know, for them and for our family, you know, that could have ever happened. And it was a amicable split with Midwest Breeders Cooperative. It was kind of funny, after their passing, we were going through paperwork they had had left over, and we came across some papers where they had purchased some equipment from Midwest Breeders Cooperative, who was actually getting ready to kind of shut down some of their smaller cooperatives where he'd purchased some equipment. And I think, you know, it was a big, long list of equipment, you know, one whole ledger page worth of equipment. And I want to say the whole thing cost them $785, you know, which again, you know, 1960, you know, $9 was a lot of money. But
sure.
You look at it now and it's like, well, gosh, this whole business was started on less than $1,000 and a dream, you know. So it, you know, it's amazing to go back and visit that story and see kind of what they, you know, what they grew out of that small little business that they started in their garage in Des Moines all those years ago.
Yeah, that's just such an amazing story. Hey, everyone, we're visiting with Dave and Brandy Jensen with Hawkeye Breeders today. Dave, Brandy, let's talk about now the modern day. I mean, your grandparents, great insight, started the business, great success. But you guys haven't sat still. Tell us a little bit about what goes on today.
Well, that's amazing. And I'll let Brandy kind of pipe into, you know, a lot of this as well. You know, I always say I'm kind of the head janitor and that's about it around here. But no, it's an amazing thing. Again, just incredible to see the advancements over the years in the industry. My grandparents, you know, again, they started the business, and unfortunately we lost it's a family business. My mom actually still comes to work here, and my mom and my dad, they're actually supposed to be the successors to my grandparents. But I lost my dad in 2007, unfortunately, and my grandparents both passed away in 2009, just 3 months, you know, within each other. And so it's been Brandy and I since then. And I guess where I was going with that was when they passed away and we were going through a lot of that stuff, 2006 to 2009 area, the dairy side of the world, which is a little different animal than the beef side of the world, you know, they kind of live and die by proofs, you know. And back in the days, I mean, really up until the late 2000s, proofs, you know, were basically the same as kind of EPDs on the beef side there, or, you know, the expected progeny differences there. Yep. And it would take years, you know, of calf crops, you know, generations of calf crops before you could really see that consistency, you know, on how the bulls and the sires and the dams were, you know, able to consistently repeat, you know, the high value genetics that they have. And so during that time, I was serving on the board, the National Association of Animal Breeders. And when I started on that board, they're 6-year terms, or you could do 2-3-year terms or elected positions there. And when I started on the board, the big push was when were proofs going to be released? You know, they did them quarterly, I think back in the day there. And I mean, that was a global thing, you know, and just in that span of time, and I always kind of use this as a barometer of how fast things have grown lately in the industry. From 2006 to when I came off that board, you know, after that 6-year term, they weren't even talking about traditional proofs at all. At the end of that time, they were talking about genomics and genomic data and when they were going to do genomic releases. So, you know, as these, this technology becomes available in the industry, be it, you know, DNA testing for genomic type of progeny differences, or the use of technology that's in other fields of medical world to allow for the sorting or gender sorting or gender selection of semen, you know, the use of nucleo counters for concentration of semen, the use of computer assisted semen analysis systems, you know, which was a rare thing in the industry. And now it's almost a requirement for any stud, whether they're commercial or custom, to utilize. So the industry has just come a long ways, leaps and bounds over the years. And it's really exciting to see. And it's really exciting to be a part of, to see those kinds of advancements and just how every year, little things, you know, I mean, things that are just small can make just huge differences as the industry grows.
Yeah, that's just amazing. Brandy, you go ahead. I interrupted you.
Well, I was going to say too, sex semen has come into the picture too, and that's become more and more popular these days. But I love how, just how many different breeds there are. I mean, Scottish Highland took a really, I mean, we hadn't seen very many of those bulls in the past, in the last several years. Oh my goodness. Tons of those, you know, just of course, club calf, they change all the time. You know, we have a lot of really good club calf customers and just even the overseas business too. I mean, we can ship semen for all over the world other than China. But it's really grown too. And, my favorite part of the business is just seeing different breeds out there change, I guess.
Yeah, my grandfather always used to say it's awesome because we've seen everything in here from Angus to Zebu, you know, covered them A to Z.
Say, folks, I was looking on the website and trying to do my homework, and it would appear to me you guys really care. I mean, I noticed the special care area and housing, and you know, you're just not running this stuff in and collecting. You take care to understand the animal and the customer.
Yes, because every animal's different. And yeah, we kind of specialize on there. It's kind of fun to, we do get bulls in from different facilities, and we do our best to try to get them to freeze. I mean, every bull is different, and, you know, there's some breeds that will freeze over 1,000 straws one collection, and then there's some that, ugh, take months to get them to turn around. But yeah, we like to specialize in that, and we have a great lab, and we have a great crew too that really care. So that makes a big difference.
So with that, are you, I know you're busy, and I know you probably are running lots of collections, but is there room for new business? Can people reach out to Hawkeye Breeders and get your services?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's great. Again, we've been blessed over the years. We've worked with some of the biggest names in the industry. We work with a lot of commercial facilities, both here in the United States and around the world. And it's been amazing. But, you know, over the years, we've grown. My grandpa used to say steady by jerks. You know, we'd kind of be static, and then we'd grow a bit, and then we'd be static and grow a bit. And it's really being able to grow that way, you know, kind of with the business has been a great thing and a great opportunity, because as Brandy had mentioned there, we're able to ship all around the world. So we've got facilities here, and we've got the know-how and you know, the long-standing tradition of being able to ship, you know, to all these different markets. So we, you know, we take on new customers all the time, like in both here in the United States and around the world. We've picked up some large customers here just in the last few years from the Netherlands, from Germany. We've got customers in Italy, you know, again, all around the world. And here in the U.S., we're honored to say that we're working with some of the largest names in the club calf, the commercial beef, and the dairy industry as well.
And we do have other locations too. I mean, a lot of people don't know that we have other collection sites, like out in out east and Kansas and North Dakota and Wisconsin. And
they're kind of partners with us, yeah. But we've got a facility in Wisconsin. We partner with a collection site and, yeah, like Rainy said, out east. But our main facility is right here in Iowa. This is where we have the, you know, the most control, and we do the most business right here in Adel.
And we store about 5 million straws of semen. And
wow,
some of it can get super expensive. It's shipped in from other countries. We had some Wagyu semen that is crazy expensive. Thank goodness we don't get that very often. But, yeah. And we collect a lot of Wagyu. That's another breed that's really gone crazy.
Yeah,
you got the original ones back in the 80s.
Yeah, we exactly like you said, the Mishima. We had the first when Japan released some of those genetics here in the late 80s, we were the only facility in the United States to get the original Mishima breeds, the Michifuku and the Yasutanis, that literally, you know, they flew them over here from Japan. We had to go to the Des Moines airport with a truck and trailer and a loading ramp to unload those. I'll never forget riding over with my grandfather to pick those bulls up from the airport. Kind of a wild deal. Like I said, it's been an amazing ride.
They knew where to take them for the best service. Say, folks, what's coming up? What's going to be, what's the next level in the AI industry?
It's, you know, it's just more of kind of what we're utilizing currently. What I see coming down the pipeline, or where I think, you know, the future is going to be bright, or I see a good advancement in the industry, is the breeders themselves being able to take back control of a lot of this, you know, a lot of this technology. When the genomics first came on board, that technology was only available to the large commercial breeding facilities, collection facilities, and things like that. Now that technology has been fine-tuned and there's a large pool of data that customers are able to draw out of, they're able to take that information and they're going to be able to utilize that to market their own animals, which I think is really exciting. And I see a lot of a future in that as well. You know, for a long time, well, throughout the, kind of the AI history, and I believe there's still going to be, you know, a strong demand for that as well, for breeders to partner up with commercial facilities to lease their bulls to commercial facilities, not discounting that as well. But for the small guy, you know, the breeders that we like to see still hanging on, because a lot of those guys, you know, I drive through the countryside and drive past farms that have grass growing up in the pastures that I remember going and collecting and testing bulls with my grandfather at. And I know there's still some of those little guys out there. We work with a lot of those guys, but you know, those guys, they're solid people. They're smart people. They know their breeding program. They know their breed. They know the industry. And to see them, you know, starting to realize that they can take a hold of this technology and use genomics, use sorted semen technology, things like that, to market their own bulls. You know, maybe a bull that a commercial facility doesn't have a big interest in, but has a certain niche market or value to be able to take the genomic information, to be able to take the technology of sorting semen, put those together, and really just use those genomic numbers to market that animal on their own. You know, I see a great opportunity there for breeders, for sure. For little guys. So I like to be able to see them utilize that. You know, sex semen, of course, it's here to stay. As it becomes more widespread and more available, you know, that's technology that, you know, customers I feel like are going to grasp onto and utilize a little bit more. moving forward as well. I put a lot of strong stock in the sorting ability and what that's going to do to the industry. So there's the future is definitely bright. You know, we're very excited about it. Our oldest son, we've got three kids, Brandon and I do. Our oldest son, Carter, he graduates from Iowa State University here in a couple weeks, and he's excited about coming back and being a part of the industry as well. He's grown up around it just like I did, and fortunately had the opportunity. He was old enough to remember my grandparents and remember some time spent with them. And it's just, you know, again, it's been God's blessing on us for sure that we were able to do what we've been doing and to live the life we've lived. And it's nice to be able to get up in the morning and be excited about what you're doing in life and be excited about making a difference in an industry that you truly love.
That's great to hear. And it's such a consistent theme in the cattle industry and in what we all do. You know, this family connection and these generational operations, and that's what you folks are, and I'm glad to hear that that's all in likelihood going to continue for years and years to come. Hey, Dave and Brandy, last question, and this maybe is a little bit off the subject, but I think it's an important one that I try to visit with anybody in the industry about, and that's the removal of the consumer from the knowledge of what the agricultural system is. I think the numbers today say that we're probably three, maybe even four generations removed from when someone who is now living an urban lifestyle even understands or maybe knew someone in the farm industry. And I mean, in all likelihood, many who live in urban settings, you know, they get their stuff from the grocery store. There's a real push, I think, in our industry to re-educate the consumer and to help them understand the process of how this happens. And I think it's on us, and I think it's on them. They most certainly need to accept the education, but we most certainly need to give that education. How does Hawkeye Breeders see their role in educating the consumer?
We agree with you 100%. We agree with you. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. The youth are our future, and we take every single chance that we can to take advantage of educating the youth, and not only, you know, on the industry, even if they don't have any interest in getting into agriculture or the AI industry, you know, let them know kind of where their food comes from, where their meal comes from, you know, and how important agriculture is in, you know, in the global economy and right in their own backyards. We have never, as near as I can tell, you know, even when we were going through some tough times with losing my grandparents, things like that, never have turned down a tour. It doesn't matter if it's two people coming through on a Tuesday afternoon or it's a group of 400 people from a, you know, a national organization that want to come visit on a Saturday, you know, and look at the bulls and look at our facility. You know, been strongly involved in national associations, strongly involved in local education, you know, FFA, 4-H, things like that, as well as, you know, any sort of educational, you know, event that we can get to let them know. You know, barring that, definitely think that we need to do what we can to get, promote agriculture, promote what it takes to, you know, what it takes to get that meal on the plate, where it comes from, and the people that are involved in it, and just how important they are in today's society.
That's well said, Dave. And I agree too. We need to pull this all back together, and I think education is the way we do that. Hey, Dave, Brandy, we better get some contact information for folks in case they want to reach out.
Yeah, of course, our phone number is 515-993-4711. We're on the internet. Email is just bjensen@hawkeyebreeders.com. We love to hear from people, any kind of questions. It's our business.
Great. Hey, guys, thank you so much. And thank you for Hawkeye Breeders and everything that you guys do for the beef and dairy industries.
Thank you. Thanks for taking time to visit with us. And we always appreciate the time to talk about about what we love and Hawkeye breeders.
Sounds good. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of the American Cattleman Podcast. Please tell your neighbors and friends about us. Take care.
Hey, before we wrap this up, here's a quick word from our good friends at UtterTech. Specializing in workwear for 30 years, UtterTech knows how to keep you clean and dry wherever the job takes you. With a full line of waterproof workwear from pants and jackets to specialized items for palpating and breeding, try a pair of the iconic waterproof bibbed overalls today. They can be rinsed off with a hose or be machine washed and dried. In addition to the waterproof items, UtterTech offers a wide variety of bags and pouches to keep everything at your fingertips. Check us out online at UtterTechInc.com or call us today at 888-438-8683. A special thanks to Dave and Brandy Jensen for taking time to chat with us today. Also, a special thanks to our sponsors, Rawhide Portable Corrals, Shorty's Cowboy Hattery, and UtterTech. We hope you enjoyed your time with us. For more information or to listen to previous episodes, visit our website, www.americancattleman.com, or check us out on social media simply by searching American Cattleman. The American Cattleman Podcast is produced by the American Cattleman Magazine. And that's a wrap for today, folks. Until next time, make sure the gate is always closed.